Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, the 20th day of September, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. I'm going to start off today with a couple of stories that fall into the category of, well, this one I had a little trouble labeling. The absurd, the offensive to your intelligence, or the just plain so idiotic that nobody would have even believed it a few years ago before most of the crowd under age 30 was dumbed down by the public cesspools to the point where they didn't even have a basic enough understanding of physics, chemistry, elementary logic, human life, or about anything else to know when they're being lied to. Or even more basically, to see contradictions that once upon a time should have just leaped off the page, well, out of the cell phone at them. So, see if you can spot the problem with this one. First example, anyway, from the Daily Mail out of the UK. Nearly 30 tons of ground beef sold in three states is being recalled, booga, 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 due to fears that it might be contaminated with what? The spike protein? mRNA? Lipid nanoparticles? Graphene oxide? No! The dreaded E. coli, which might make you have diarrhea, but probably won't destroy your heart, your lungs, or your immune system. Can you see the contradiction here? Yep, could be a potentially deadly food poisoning bug, even though evidently nobody, and that means zero, count them, on the fingers of no hands, zero people have actually gotten sick. And I think that means that nobody's died. Oh, and by the way, all you got to do is just cook this meat, and it kills E. coli anyway. No wonder the Biden Fuhrer and his minions want to take away your gas stove. But ponder the irony here, folks, and that's the real point. Why, if this was a Cyclone B injection from Moderna or Pfizer, they'd keep on doing it, even after 100,000 or so had not only gotten sick, but keeled over dead, some of them on national TV. If you're not mad, folks, you're not paying attention. The three, and in this case, four-letter health agencies want you to believe they actually care about you. All the while, they're trying to kill you and not even hiding it. A clearly related story next from Daisy Luther, the organic prepper. Justin Trudeau, Prime Minister of Canada, and Chicago's Mayor Brandon Johnson, communists both of them, want to heap more taxes on grocery stores to punish them for the high Biden-Fuhrer-like prices, while Chicago's dictator thinks the answer is more communism. City-owned and controlled grocery stores. And if you thought it was bad before what they wanted you to eat, folks, just wait. Why, look, says Daisy Luther, what was done in Venezuela that led to even more widespread hunger after the government took control of food production and distribution facilities. Not only that, they began to force farmers to produce food, at least a little bit of it, for less than the cost of growing and raising it. They rationed food to families and even began to track people who were trying to grow their own food. In short, they kind of pulled a Biden, or at least a communist Chinese party control mechanism. They made every terrible decision it was possible to make, all the while trying to get you to believe it was for your own good. Yeah, sure. Here's another one. Gotta ask the question, is this level of incompetence just something that we're getting used to, whether it's the White Whorehouse, the Congress, or especially what was once called the United States military, back when it actually did defense of this country, as opposed to enforcing the borders only of other countries? Meanwhile, trying to teach soldiers, sailors, pilots, and Marines politically correct BS? Instead of military preparedness, it's certainly gotten to the point where it seems that the only thing Mark Milley and Lloyd Austin's little patsies really care about is transgenderism, LGBTQIAP plus ideology, and of course, hey, can we put on our fuzzy outfits and get a little animalistic out there on that boat? The latest example, of course, somebody seems to have misplaced $100 million or so F-35 for well over a day. Then it shows up. Is it really the wreckage that we're looking at, or is it just somebody covering their you-know-what? How are you going to tell? Who's going to know? You think they're going to tell you the truth? Here's one more story that's an example of what I'm talking about. New footage, says Zero Hedge, reveals the wreckage, oh really, are we sure, of that F-35 jet amidst speculation about a potential cyber attack. Yeah, the alleged wreckage footage at least shows the missing F-35 Lightning II stealth fighter in Williamsburg County, South Carolina. The alleged debris field is about 80 miles from Joint Base Charleston, and the military has confirmed that the stealth jet was on autopilot when the pilot ejected. Although pilots don't usually eject from actually flying airplanes, the general concept is the pilot flies it until it's absolutely positively not survivable, then pulls the plug. But the reasons for the ejection remain amazingly, strangely even, unknown. Meanwhile, aviation commanders had decided to ground all Marine Corps F-35 aircraft as of Tuesday. Do you still get the impression, folks, that there's something here they're just not telling you? Well, the Marine Corps has labeled it a Class A mishap. That means a major, aw shit. hence the two-day stand-down. Meanwhile, South Carolina Representative Nancy Mace of Charleston wrote on X, "Just how in the hell do you lose an F-35? And added some salient questions like, why isn't there a tracking device? Why are we having to ask the public things like, have you seen our missing jet? Actually, the best comment I saw came from the Babylon Bee, which seemed to suggest maybe that explains why there are so many Marines walking around the woods with F-35 key fobs, pushing the button, listening for the jet's doors to unlock. Asked one concerned citizen, hey, this is a friggin' fighter jet, for crying out loud, with advanced military weaponry. Don't they at least have GPS or LoJack or something? Come on, Pentagon. Well, folks, any well-deserved ridicule of Pentagon incompetence aside, these are, after all, the people that once tried to have us believe that they are defending this country. Let me restate that, make sure I get the emphasis right. Defending this country, what a concept. Well, now there is rightful concern that just maybe the most expensive weapon system in the history of planet Earth might have been cyber-attacked. Hacked, even. Well, it's either that or Biden gave the keys to one of his communist Chinese puppet masters. Which is more believable? I know, it's a tough choice. The Daily Mail, as I kind of noted yesterday, has released a report from the Project on Government Oversight, an independent, nonpartisan watchdog that investigates government waste, corruption, abuse of power, and so forth. They got a lot to do lately. And their 2019 report showed that, quote, nearly every software-enabled weapons system tested between 2012 and 2017 can be hacked, and that includes the F-35. Things like its most combat-crucial computer systems that continue to malfunction famously, including the ALIS, or Autonomic Logistics Information System, data links that display combined and exchange target and threat information among fighters and intelligence sources, and maybe even Communist Chinese Party puppets, plants, or presidents. As in previous years, cybersecurity testing shows that many previously confirmed F-35 vulnerabilities have not been fixed. Hey, we've still got lots of government contracts to issue, don't you know? Meaning enemy hackers could potentially, or is it more than potential now, shut down the ALIS network, steal secret data from the network and onboard computers, and perhaps even prevent the F-35 from flying or from accomplishing its missions. Or, folks, now we have to add, maybe they could even eject the pilot in flight and fly that plane to some base, take it apart, and then crash something in its place and convince gullible Americans that, hey, no, we didn't steal a missing fighter plane. We just want to know how not to design one for our own communist or Soviet or North Korean systems. Zero Hedge adds this, quote, Green Hills Software produces the Integrity 178B operating system that powers the F-35, also the F-22, F-16, and B-2 bomber, and it also powers the Airbus A380. It was, in fact, also quite possibly leaked, and now you understand why the entire USMC air fleet has been grounded. And that, folks, is about the only fact associated with this entire debacle that maybe shouldn't keep you awake at night. Remember, folks, General Mark Milley, sick, still the same scumbag that back during the Trump administration promised his Communist Chinese Party buddies in the People's Liberation Army that if the president, the real one that was then, actually decided to try to do something like launch nukes against China, don't worry, he'd let them know. Why do we think he won't give them the plans to, top-secret stealth fighter jets, too? Or worse. Do you think I'm kidding? How much treason does it take to destroy a country from within? This is the same country that let Nancy Pelosi get away with having Communist Chinese Party staffers and drivers and didn't even seem to care that bang-bang with Fang Fang was going on in the office of Eric Swalwell, still on the House Intelligence Committee at the time. Folks, here's the point. We are seeing so much incompetence that we do have to ask the question, do we really believe that they could possibly be this incompetent? Yeah, they're working hard to convince us, but come on, it's just possible, too, that there is some actual treason at work because we see it literally all over the place. Why not in the military? Why not in the transgender, dumbed-down, fuzzy-loving, LGBTQ++, not National Defense Organization? Let's go on from there and talk about another kind of incompetence that nobody that's paying any attention could possibly believe is merely incredible incompetence. Starting with this story from the Gateway Pundit about former D.C. Police Chief's son, who testified at a hearing before the House Administration Subcommittee on Oversight entitled Oversight of United States Capitol Security and Assessing Security Failures on January 6, 2020. While we certainly know that Chief Stevens' son has been an outspoken opponent of nutcase Nancy Pelosi over her failure to, at minimum, secure the U.S. Capitol that day, and arguably something far worse, he called her out under oath for a great big whopping lie. Pelosi, as you may know, claimed she never spoke to the guy. But son says he has the receipts, and furthermore, he talked to her not once, not twice, but three times on that very fateful day. In response to a question about how, quote, Speaker Pelosi called for your resignation on national TV and stated that she hadn't talked to you since the initial breach of the Capitol, in your transcribed interview, you said otherwise. You were on with her several times. Can you explain the discrepancy? And yes, said Chief Sund, that's correct. I spoke with Speaker Pelosi three times that evening, and she went on national television and said I'd never spoken to her, but I spoke to her three times. Those three times were, he said, first when I went over to brief Vice President Pence at the same location. I talked to the House Sergeant at Arms Irving and told him I was going over to brief the Vice President, and I was also going over to do a personal assessment of the Capitol. At that point, things were getting under control, he said. Went over there, briefed him on whom he can get them back into chambers, with Mr. Irving being fully aware. He said he wanted to get Speaker Pelosi on the phone. He made a call from his cell at approximately 5:34 when I first briefed Speaker Pelosi. The second call was when I left that location. As I was walking away, I met up with Mr. Stinger. While we were walking, a woman named Jennifer Hemingway handed me her cell phone. It was Emily Barrett's cell, and it was Speaker Pelosi on the other end of the line. That was my second call, he said, with her questioning the information I'd given to Vice President Pence about when we can get back into chambers. I assured her that was correct. I'd get him back by 7 o'clock p.m. and the call ended. That was number two. Call number three was at 6:25 p.m., he said. I was over at the Senate from the secure location. And using Robert Caron's cell phone, they dialed leadership, who was also over offsite at a secure location, and I briefed all of leadership of the plans to get them back into chambers. That would have been, he said, call number three with Speaker Pelosi. And he told the subcommittee he has the documentation to prove that what he was saying was accurate. So she lied about all of that, and I guess the obvious point is that is just the tip of a Titanic-sized iceberg of lies. But this one, though, concerning the overthrow of the U.S. government that actually happened a lot earlier than January 6th, is arguably even bigger. As reported on Tuesday, says another piece from TGP and Jim Hoff, the House Judiciary Republicans sent out a letter that includes a transcribed bunch of testimony from former assistant director in charge of the Washington field office, a scumbag, and that's my terminology, folks, named Stephen D. Antuono, who testified that the FBI had a number of confidential human sources, or CHSs, right there in the crowd on January 6th. Gee, who could have thought it? In fact, he said, they had so many FBI operatives in the crowd, they just plain had no idea how many were actually there that day. Although he didn't quite emphasize it the way that it should have been. Yep, says TGP, D'Antuono had quite a record of failures and outright lies during his tenure at the FBI. He was head of the FBI Detroit field office as that so-called bureau was investigating, yeah, how's that for a word that needs sick afterwards, the supposed kidnapping attempt against Michigan tyrant Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And we know what a debacle that turned out to be and how many lies were told there, at least we ought to. And you probably recall that plot wasn't just investigated, but instigated by the FBI, with the jury hearing that the Bureau's informants gave drugs to those who were eventually charged in the plot before recording their conversations, and that the plotters were sometimes outnumbered by the FBI confidential human sources during the meetings. The entire plot, in other words, was hatched, planned, paid for, and executed by paid FBI informants, at minimum. Well, in the letter released Tuesday, D'Antuono told House investigators he didn't even know how many FBI agents had infiltrated the crowd on January 6th. But he had claimed that it was only a handful of FBI informants in the crowd that day. And for 2 years now, says the Gateway Pundit, they've been reporting on FBI informants and other feds who infiltrated the Trump crowds on January the 6th. And now we can report, they say, for certain that assistant director in charge of the Washington field office, Stephen D'Antuono, is lying about the number of operatives, FBI agents, and informants in the crowd on January 6th. And they go through three pages, folks, of documentation about what that means. which makes this a good time to take a quick trip back in the Wayback Machine to the release of the John Durham Report that you may recall from mid-May this year that touched on some very similar issues. And as many, many people have pointed out, and your host certainly concurs, there really is nothing whatsoever new in there. As a matter of fact, it's been rightfully criticized because he didn't actually even recommend any action. Like, for example, trials and execution for seditious conspiracy, or let's just call it what it ended up being, a war on the American people, a.k.a. treason. And you knew it was never going to say anything, even remotely, that blunt or bold, didn't you? So let's point to just a couple of the things up front that we all knew, but that still at least bear a bit of repeating here. For example, not only was the Golden Showers BS precisely that, remember how Trump met with prostitutes at that Moscow hotel? Turns out he'd never even been to that Moscow hotel. But evidently, that didn't even slow down the Federal Bureau of Investigation. They had a narrative, and it was going to come to pass, and the media was going to cover it. And it's a good thing they owned them too, isn't it? Come hell or high water. And it looks like we've ended up getting both. The Durham Report identified the likely source of the BS. Furthermore, the FBI wanted to keep paying the Steele dossier source $300,000 after he was caught lying. Here's another one. The plan by Hillary Clinton to link Obama to Russia, Russia, Russia was actually briefed, as if we didn't know this, by John Brennan to Obama and Biden in August, before the election, 2016. And that's from Zero Hedge. Remember the Clinton Foundation? Well, unless you listen to CNN, you probably do. Which took millions in foreign donations when everyone thought that Hillary Clinton was in fact a shoo-in because she was supposed to win, don't you remember? Going into the 2016 election, trouble is the landslide was even bigger than the election riggers were able to deal with, at least back then. And what happened after she didn't win the dictatorship? Well, donations to the bogus fund plunged by 90%. Now we learn, thanks to the Durham Report and Tyler Durden, that the FBI had 3 concurrent investigations into the Clinton Foundation, which were, can you imagine this, all shut down during the 2016 election year by top brass. Hey, they had a different president to make sure never managed to actually do anything to, what was it the Wicked Witch called it? Turns out that the scope of Durham's review included the FBI, it's tough for me to say this, investigations directed at the crooked Hillary Clinton campaign. It seems the purpose of his review was to assess and compare the oh-so-favorable treatment received by Clinton to the targeting of the actually elected president. Which takes me next to some really salient comments by Chris Menahan from InformationLiberation.com, who writes that after 4 years of dragging his feet, Special Counsel John Durham has finally released his much-hyped and oh-so-long-awaited report on the FBI Trump Russia, Russia, Russia probe earlier this week, which largely confirms what everybody who's been paying attention already knew, but attributes, instead of malice on the part of the FBI, the real evil that they did, along, of course, with the CIA and other so-called intelligence agencies that really did destroy the republic in these United States a long time ago, but they put a wooden stake in it recently. Well, they attributed that evil to incompetence or bias rather than what it was, treason or at least seditious conspiracy. And in the process, effectively shielded the agency and all the criminals involved from any culpability for outright obvious criminal actions. My theory, says Menahan, is that William Barr and Durham were just stringing everyone along with vague promises that the FBI or deep state would someday, some when, maybe, just maybe be accountable for their crimes. As they ran down the clock on Trump's presidency, and all that seems to have now been borne out by the evidence. And 2 years into the Obama regime and the continued mass destruction of a once free republic, I guess you could say they've consolidated their gains. Here he turns to none other than the leftist mouthpiece, the New York Times, Charlie Savage, Glenn Thrush, and others, who wrote that in its final report, the Trump-era special counsel denounces the Russia investigation. And they focus on this, a quote from the report, which they say concluded that the FBI suffered from confirmation bias and a lack of analytical rigor. In other words, folks, they couldn't find their you-know-what with both hands, and that's why they were so idiotically incapable of actually finding real criminality, and instead, you know what they did, good grief, as they pursued leads about Mr. Trump's alleged, but it turned out to be totally bogus, ties to Russia. Here's the money quote from the New York Times. An objective and honest assessment of these strands of information should have caused the FBI to question not only the predication for Operation Crossfire Hurricane, but also to reflect on whether the FBI was being manipulated for political or other purposes, he wrote. Unfortunately, it did not. In other words, folks, they're just so stinking incompetent that we just have to let them off of the hook for being, what, pawns of Russia, Russia, Russia? No, pawns of the communist conspiracy that has destroyed the Constitutional Republic. And it's not the fact that they're evil. It's just that they're so damn stupid. You know what? I remember an old joke at this point. There was a guy that was so drunk that his drunken friends decided, oh, no, he's too drunk to even throw on the truck at this point. Let's just let him drive. And that seems to be the summary of the Durham report. The FBI is so incompetent, so idiotically drunk, that they got no business even being part of a free republic. Let's let him drive. Writes Chris Menahan, it was the FBI that was doing the manipulation, and to portray them as innocent victims is just outright comical, or worse. Mr. Durham said he was not recommending any wholesale changes to FBI rules for politically sensitive investigations and for national security wiretaps. What a sick joke, which have already been tightened in recent years. He did recommend that the Department of Just Us consider assigning an official to internally challenge steps to take in politically sensitive investigations. In other words, when somebody's on the take and we know it, how do we keep that covered up? The report amounted in part to a defense and a justification of a lengthy investigation that, says the New York Times, developed only two criminal cases, both of which, in a crooked system, can we really be surprised, ended exactly as you knew they would, in acquittal. Technofog, though, has some of the main points from the report, part of which I've excerpted below, says Menahan. Crossfire Hurricane was opened as a full investigation without the FBI having ever actually spoken to the persons who provided the information. Days after it was open, Peter Strzok, remember that scumbag, was telling a London FBI employee that, quote, there's nothing to this, but that didn't even slow him down now, did it? Number two, internal FBI communications discussing Crossfire Hurricane during its early stages said things like, well, it's thin, and yeah, it sucks, but that didn't stop them either. British intelligence pushed back on the Mueller request for assistance, writing, quote, a British intelligence person basically said there was no effing way in hell they were going to do it, unquote. Durham documents two investigations. Durham documented those investigations, sick, into Hillary Clinton, and you know what happened to those. In one Clinton campaign investigation, the FBI confidential human source, or CHS, was that Hunter? Oh, that was a different criminal action. Had offered an illegal foreign contribution to the campaign through an intermediary. The Clinton campaign was okay with it and fully aware. The CHS offered the FBI a copy of the credit card charges. The FBI never got any receipts. And in fact, the handling agent for the Bureau of Instigation told CHS to, quote, stay away from all events relating to the Clinton campaign, unquote. And I'll put it this way. Sounds like somebody was untouchable. How about this one? In February 2016, FBI Assistant Director, you know this name, scumbag Andrew McCabe, directed the Clinton Foundation investigation to be shut down. He walked that back after receiving pushback, but McCabe made sure that his approval was required for any further actual investigative steps, which you know darn well never really happened. How about this one? The New York field office was called on behalf of FBI Director James, I'm the head of this stinking organization, Comey, and informed to cease and desist from any Clinton Foundation investigation. And let's not forget, the FBI and DOJ restricted both of those Clinton investigations, making sure that, quote, essentially no investigative activities occurred for months leading up to the election. In comparison, the FBI opened a full investigation, in spite of the fact they didn't even have any evidence, into the Trump campaign based on unvetted so-called intelligence. The main issue, says Menahan, all of this was put down as confirmation bias rather than what it was, a criminal conspiracy. Now, here's an interesting point that he makes. The Proud Boys were found guilty of seditious conspiracy with little or no evidence whatsoever. Isn't that amazing? But the FBI launched a political investigation into Trump's campaign to sabotage him and dig up dirt on all of his allies just so they could be thrown in prison. And all of this was just a product of confirmation bias, which got out of hand. Gee, can you smell a rat here? Literally nothing, says Menahan, will come of this report, and you know it. That is by design. And a third of a year later, we still can't argue with that. May Yahuwah bless you and yours.